Hello and welcome to Future Projection. This is a Baseball America podcast. I'm Carlos Collazo, joined by Ben Badler. You still know how to do this, Ben? How you doing?
Hi, it's nice to meet you. What did you say your name was again?
It's been a little while since our last podcast, Ben. I guess this is the norm for us in the middle of the summer. You've been out at fields. I've been out at fields recently, actually, which has been refreshing. We're down here in North Carolina now, so I'm like 10 minutes away from the USA Baseball Complex. So I'm hoping to be all over that place for all the various events they have all summer. And I know you've been making your way, it seems like, up and down the entirety of the East Coast recently. So how are you and what have you been up to and why haven't we podcasted in nearly a month at this stage?
Well, for the first one, I'll wear that one. That was on me. I had been in Atlanta, down in Georgia, for a couple different events. And then I came back. I calculated it. I think I was at over a 7-day stretch. I was at the field for, I think it was 107 hours over those 7 days. And I came back and I was just like, I have zero idea what is going on in the world outside of these baseball fields where I've been at.
You're listening, so you can't see Ben, but he's definitely much tanner now than the last time we spoke from all of his hours in the sun.
Yeah. So that I was just gassed for that one. I'll wear that one. And then, I don't know, I guess you got, what did you have? Like, is there something important coming up for you on the calendar in the next 10 days or so that's been taken up?
Yeah.
Some time?
And you know, things weren't made easy either because we had a move from Virginia to North Carolina like 3 weeks before the draft. So just throwing that like off the field stuff into our regular draft prep, that's already very time consuming. I feel like you've had more fun probably the last month or so actually being out at games, watching players, being at the field. A lot of my time, it feels like it's been sitting in front of the computer, fine tuning our rankings, finalizing our reports, talking with scouts, talking with people in front offices, talking with agents, trying to figure out what's happening on draft day. So it has been fun in its own right, but both of us very busy.
The good thing is nothing has happened in the last 3 weeks of any importance in the amateur world in particular.
My biggest regret from our gap was I feel like talking about MLB's proposed amateur acquisition changes in the next CBA could have carried us for an entire podcast. And I know that it's not the most timely thing in the world, but because we missed it, I did want to get your thoughts on it. We've obviously covered it reasonably extensively over at baseballamerica.com with the various pieces from JJ Cooper. Jacob Rudner had kind of the college coaching angle. I talked to some scouts to get their reactions, which were as explosive and energetic as you maybe would expect. We did some podcasts and some videos on that, but outside of like, I think you had a few tweets out, Ben. I don't know that you've been able to get your thoughts or just a conversation between us on that, because that proposal obviously deals squarely with our primary areas of coverage here at Baseball America, the amateur player scene, high school players, international players. I guess what are your like broad thoughts or takeaways or feedback from people in the industry? Let's talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, I love everything MLB is doing. High school players, I don't like them. Kevin McGonigal, Connor Griffin. I would rather not watch these guys getting to the big leagues at 20 or 19 and 21 years old.
But they're cutting down the 3 years to 2 years in college, Ben. It'll be a quicker path to the majors this way, won't it?
I'm not surprised that MLB made this proposal. If I'm the Players Association, both the high school side and the raising of the international signing age are immediate no-goes for me.
Raised to 18 in this proposal, by the way. And all of this is just proposals. So,
right. The big thing, and I brought this up in the last CBA negotiation where MLB was also trying to raise the signing age, I don't think the Players Association cares about amateur players. Like, they're not part of their union. So those players don't have a seat at the negotiating table. But what does matter is the decisions that you make about amateur players will have long-term ramifications for every member of the union. Because if you start signing players at later ages, you will then have those players reach free agency at later ages. And part of the reason why Juan Soto and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. can sign for $1 gazillion is because they're becoming free agents still in the prime window of their careers, because they're signing at 16 years old. They're getting to the big leagues when they're 19, 20 years old. Guys are getting the big leagues at 21 years old. If you are now saying, okay, you can't sign an international player until you're 18 instead of, you know, 16, 17, you're delaying how quickly they're going to get to the big leagues. The same thing with the high school players, where if you're banning them from the draft, now they're going to get to free agency later. And if you're signing a free agent at 29 years old, you now know as a team, like, all right, we're signing this player on the decline phase of his career. Right. Now there's only so many players you can go out and sign, and some, you know, guys will still get good money, but at the same time, it's not going to be as much. You're going to cut down the market. So, you know, whether that's a good thing or bad thing for baseball, I think the union will be pretty strongly, or should be.
And they have already come out with pretty strong condemnation of the proposal for a lot of the reasons you mentioned there.
Yeah, so that's not surprising to me. I also think, look, MLB, I understand where they're coming from in terms of saying, well, this is the problem. One of the problems with MLB is just they're so dishonest in their messaging of like why they're trying to do this. They're trying to do this to cut down on costs for the owners, right? The high school players are, if you don't have to scout high school players anymore, you need fewer scouts, and not just fewer scouts, but you're spending a lot less money to scout players in general, because right. The college guys, everything they do for the most part is on video, every at bat, every pitch. And most of those pitches are tracked at fields where they have TrackMan units. Like, you know which, and you have stats for all of these players.
Mm-hmm.
You don't, oh, it's certainly like, all right, if you want to go scout like a D2 guy or something like that, fine. Or you got a real small school guy out of the way. Sure. Right. You got to do a little bit more in-person homework on those guys. And guys will still get scouted in person. But high school teams have already...
To your point about the colleges with the video and the data that's available, teams have already either reallocated their scouts' times or cut down on their staffs in some way, with like fewer scouts going to college games because they're handling a lot of that evaluation with video and data already. And you would think, which is the point you're making here, if high school players are removed entirely from the draft, then you would have further cuts to your scouting department. You need fewer people to go out and to go see games. There's a piece that was in the preview edition, the draft preview edition of the magazine, that'll be on the site next week, about kind of how teams are scouting, developing, and evaluating high school pitchers versus college pitchers. And one of the things that came up when I was reporting that story was just the amount of work and the amount of like actual hours you need on the ground at the field for a high school player to feel comfortable with your evaluation is significantly higher than college, because theoretically your entire scouting department can watch all of the college outings at their leisure on video without leaving their home, without the travel costs associated with that. And you can get a diversity of looks. To do the same for a high school player, you would have to travel out to those games, see all those games live with multiple people. Just the amount of coverage and the amount of comfort you can get with a college player versus a high school player is so much more expensive for the high school player. And that would be an area where teams would obviously look to cut costs if this happened.
And there's a huge number of high school players that you have to make sure to cover, not because you think you're going to draft all of them, but because you also don't know really in a lot of cases about the signability until it gets closer to the draft. So there might be a player who, you know, let's say we have him ranked 250 on our high school player rankings, where it's like, okay, we think this guy is a good player. There are things we like about him, but he's not like a top tier. Like, he's a 3-star recruit. He's not the 4 or 5-star group, but this is somebody who we think has, you know, a future as a pro prospect, is a good player. Well, maybe he is willing to sign for $150,000, $200,000. And you have to do your homework on those guys. And there's just so many players spread out all across the country. And you have your, you know, you want to get multiple looks from multiple people within your organization on these guys. So it's expensive for teams to do that. And MLB owners are saying, well, what if we all just, you know, basically like work together essentially and say, all right, well, none of us can draft any of these guys. So we're not competing against the, right. you know, we're not competing against each other, driving up our own cost to scout these players. Right. Also, look, in fairness, from MLB's perspective, yeah, you will make better decisions on players if you just push everybody to college. Like, you're going to make more mistakes on 18-year-old pitchers than you will if you say, all right, everybody has to go to college and, you know, we'll evaluate everybody from there. I think obviously if you're a college baseball fan, and you don't care as much about the big league product, you're like, yeah, awesome. Like, I'd love to see Connor Griffin at LSU or Kevin McGonigal and Colt Emerson teaming up for 2 years as the Auburn middle infield. Like, that'd be fun to watch. And there's part of me that is like, yeah, I'd like to see that too, but not as much as I would like to see those guys have the opportunity and the freedom, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of things I just care about is, you know, freedom for teams, freedom for players to do what they want. So,
yeah, I agree. I think that one thing that was brought up when I was asking scouts about this was even outside of like the ramifications for scouts themselves or the scouting industry. It was just the sense that like these guys are talking to a lot of players who are either not ready for a college environment or have no interest at all in a college environment. And so forcing those players who would otherwise be ready to go into pro ball and start their career and really focus on developing as a full-time baseball player, it's not a positive for those players. I think you could argue that most high school players probably need to go to college first. It's a small minority of high school players in the country that are ready to go straight into pro ball. But I think ultimately, like, the biggest takeaway, the biggest loss for baseball from this would be losing out on all of the stars you could mention, you could talk about. You already named some of them, but you could go historically. The number of players who reach the major leagues as teenagers, as 20-year-olds, you're just lopping that entire player population off for no reason other than to cut costs, in my mind. And I think that'd be a tremendous loss for the game. In addition to, I think there is some idea that if you sent the Connor Griffins of the world and the Kevin McGonigals of the world to college, they would wind up being the same player just a few years later in pro ball. And while I think the elite talents like that probably more often than not are going to work out, I do think there is this sense that like you're going to get the same development in college. And I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I think especially with what we've seen with hitters with metal bats in college and the value of hitting with wood against professional pitching, I think there is a lot of development that happens for young hitters by playing full-time regularly with wood that might not happen. I mean, Connor Griffin needed to make some improvements to his pure hitting ability after he was drafted. He did that in pro ball. Would he definitely have done that if he went to college? Or would he have been talented enough and physical enough to be successful without making some of the swing changes and improvements that he did make in pro ball? I don't know. I think that's a question that people should also ask. I know scouts obviously have different opinions on how colleges develop players, and we can get into maybe the incentives around college baseball and development there. I think some teams do a really good job developing players, but I certainly don't think universally it's a better player development system, just because inherently college coaches and college teams are looking for results and outcomes that are not always aligned with the best interests of a long-term player's future.
Yeah, I think there's truth to that. sometimes I think it gets overstated on both sides. Like the college teams, they want to win games. When the way you win games also is by developing better players. Like, I think the colleges do care about developing players. And there's some very innovative things that are happening on the college side that, you know, sometimes it's not, oh, well, let's watch what they're doing in the big leagues and we'll watch what MLB teams are doing. It's, hey, let's try our own stuff. And then MLB teams are looking at what the colleges, that the most successful college programs are doing as far as development, saying, oh, we're going to borrow that from you, or we're just going to hire that guy in some cases. But yeah, there's going to be freshmen right now who will sign and go, who are currently signing and going to play professional baseball, where like, had they gone to college, especially if it's a big time program in an SEC, ACC school, top 25 program, they might not be good enough to play right away. And it doesn't mean you have to play right. Like Von Lackey was not like blowing the doors off anybody as a freshman. And now he's going to be a top 3 overall pick this year. So you can still develop without playing as a freshman. But I think it is a lot more advantageous to, if you want to get better at baseball, you have to play baseball games. I know that's like a revolutionary idea, but I think, yeah, it's not the same for everybody. I think also ultimately, look, this is how MLB negotiates every time, is they come in at the very start of a negotiation and they like have this like these big ideas, and it's like, oh, this all this grandiose stuff, and it's a little like over the top, and you're like, what's all right? So what do you actually really want here? What are they actually really hoping for? And I don't know that they actually want to eliminate all high school players from the draft, although it was funny for me while I was on the road as in Cary at the field there for a tournament, reading all these tweets from MLB pumping up all these high school players at the combine that they're also trying to get banned
simultaneously, trying to remove from their system.
I think what MLB would probably really like is to say, I think they're actually like, they're smart enough to know, yeah, we want the Connor Griffins, we want the Bobby Witt Juniors, we want the Kevin McGonagalls,
getting the Grady Emersons.
Yeah, we want these guys coming in right away. What we don't want is
to pay them.
Well, that what we don't want is, you know, what the Brewers are doing, which is going after all these high school players in the later rounds. And why are we scouting all of these guys who are beyond, you know, the top 2-3 round type guys, right? Like the top 50 to 100 high school players in a given class, because those are the guys that really are the guys that are getting to the big leagues quickly anyway, right? Like you're not drafting a guy, you know, like on an overslot deal in the 11th round, who's getting to the big leagues when he's like 21 and is turning like a superstar that way. You can get good players that way, but for the most part, you know, your Bobby Witt Juniors, your Colt Emersons, your Bryce Eldridge, like those guys are going either in the first round or the top two or three rounds, right? So I could see a scenario, and I could see a scenario where the union agrees to this because they're still getting those guys who are getting to, you know, the big leagues at 20 and free agency. Well, you know, some of those guys signed extensions already, but, you know, have the potential to get to free agency when they're 26, 27 years old. I could see a scenario where MLB proposes and the union agrees to say, if you can draft a high school player, as long as that high school player is drafted within the first two rounds or three rounds or top 100 overall picks, because then you're not spending your money and your time as an organization going around and scouting every high school player who, you know, your area scout likes to a certain extent. You're like, well, we can't get this guy. So, you know, we'll scout all the top guys at the major tournaments and showcases during the summer at Area Codes, East Coast Pro, et cetera, et cetera. And then, hey, if the guys pop up during the spring, spend a little bit more time on them. But we have now a select group of high school players that we're actually spending money and time on to scout.
Hey, SeatGeek is MLB's official ticket marketplace. And in addition to finding every single game on the MLB calendar, there are big events coming up very soon.
There's an all-star game. There's a home run derby. And if you think you're perfect and you can pick the right seat at the home run derby to get the most home run balls, you can get the little green dot, and that might be your lucky seat. Don't go red dot, though, because you might not get any balls. But go red, green dot, and get as many home run balls as you think you can catch.
Yep. You click the seat. You check out what your view is. Each ticket's rated on a scale of 1 to 10, so you know you're getting a good deal. And that's what AJ's talking about. Green good, red bad, with those dots. And the code for you, territory10, for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any MLB tickets with promo code territory10. Make sure you click the link in the description of this episode. That'll help you download the app and get the code automatically added to your account so that you can use it later. Thank you to SeatGeek.
I guess I don't really understand why MLB would care about that, to be honest with you. Like,
about what?
About preventing teams from signing high school players after a certain range, because
they don't want to spend the money. Well, they want to send all those guys to college, and I think they think they will.
Why?
I don't disagree either.
The Brewers would seem to represent the exact antithesis of that argument, where you could say, hey, we are worried about cost control at the major league level. Well, the Brewers are a small market team that's currently 19th in payroll. They've never been a huge spending team, and they have found a competitive advantage by navigating the draft in a way that they have added lots of value at an extremely cheap price. Like, the draft inherently, the international market inherently, are capped systems where players are not receiving full free market value that they would receive in a system outside of that. I would think if you're a small market team who's not happy with the disparity in payroll or the disparity in spending power, that those teams would appreciate the value you can get in this system by being aggressive on the high school players, like you mentioned. Like we've talked, we've used the Brewers as an example because they're the best recent example of this. They have the best farm system in baseball right now. They do a tremendous job with evaluating. They have gone after these. Like, in my mind, it's hard to see MLB saying, oh, like, you're getting elite deals on these high school players. We got to stop that. I just don't understand what the logic is from MLB's perspective, or what the logic is from small market ownership perspective. Would be like, am I crazy? Like, these are the best deals you're ever going to get. The small market teams should be all over this. That, well, if anything, like, removing this avenue of acquiring players, it's only helping the big market teams, because this is your chance to get those impact players on value, on cheap deals. Like, you can afford those players now. Find them before they become stars, and big market teams like the Dodgers or the Mets or the Blue Jays sign them away. Like, now's your opportunity. Now, and removing that ability, I guess if the owners get a cap system, who cares? But I just don't see the logic of why a small market ownership group would want to go away from that demographic in the draft at any level, first round, second round, 20th round. Look at Eric Hartman. Like, you can get an Eric Hartman in the 20th round and you don't want to sign high school players? It makes no sense to me.
They want to reduce competition among each other. Like, it's cartelization of the game, right?
Socialism in baseball.
Well, they're saying, look, if none of us can sign these players, then we don't have to spend and compete against each other. Like, they look at it, they talk amongst each other, and they're like, hey, dummies, why are we trying to compete against each other? Like, we are the only competition for these players.
Yeah.
So why are we spending money against each other?
Yeah.
Trying to
all
do
of this.
We can all get together and find this system where we don't have to spend
all of
as
this
much
makes,
money.
All of this makes sense through the lens of a reality where there is a salary cap and floor, because all of these issues go away in that scenario. You're never being outspent at a certain level. You can always spend towards whatever the bottom of a cap be. You wouldn't have to work. Like, everyone's paying the same for every player. Everyone can get their little participation trophy. That makes sense.
Well, but I think also, terrible. Look, to steel man this from MLB side too, they can say, and they'll be right, that if we push more players to college, we will make better decisions on these players. Like, it's, I love projecting.
I would push back on that a little, but I'd say in large part, yes.
I love projecting high school players. outside of like the first round, first couple rounds, like it's hard.
I think that's
hard.
True of college play. I don't think there is a significant hit rate of college players deep in the draft compared to high school players. I think deep in the draft, any demographic, the hit rate falls off a cliff because all of this is hard. And I also think
high school pitching, do you think the track record of high school pitching is great? I think it's much better once you send these guys to college and can make decisions on those players from there. I think it's still really hard. I'm not saying it's easy to do, but you will have a lot more information. You will see which players can stay healthy and which players can't. You will see which players, the projection on their stuff comes through and which ones don't, who actually can go out and perform in,
I mean,
in these leagues compared to just blowing it past high school guys.
Right. Well, what's funny is like nothing is stopping teams from doing that now. And I think there have been some teams who have taken a very college heavy approach that has not paid off for them in the draft, that has not allowed them to add winning players to their teams and become competitive. So I think like, I do think it is maybe adding more conviction to college profiles than actually exists in reality. Like it makes sense. I think you can feel a lot more comfort in a college player. You can say that like, oh, we don't have to project as much. We have all this data we can look at, but I don't think there is enough evidence, especially when you're weighing the fact that like you can hit higher on high school players than a lot of these college. And so much of this is tied to like the current system. Like if we had 10 years under a college only system, a lot of what we're saying would change. But I do think there's also a question that I wanted to throw to you. Like, I'm curious how teams would handle scouting high school players in a system where you can't sign them. Because I do think some of the teams who are willing to spend, even in this scenario, would have a lot of value in creating longer histories with their high school players. Like if you're going to completely abandon your high school evaluations and just say, okay, we can't sign any high school players, we're just signing college players. Well, now you have 1 year less in college because college players, a majority of them will be eligible after their second year in college. Are you really prepared to draft your entire draft off 2 seasons of scouting and data on college players? Or do you think teams who have spent a year, maybe multiple years, evaluating those players in high school and just building history with those players, I think there would be a tremendous competitive advantage for the teams who are still willing to do the work and scout those players before they get to college, even knowing they can't sign them for multiple years. I think that would be an obvious area that I would be, if I was running a scouting department or a team, I'd say, hey, like there are going to be a lot of teams who make mistakes because they're going to take, I mean, let's be honest, the college season is not tremendously lengthy. In some scenarios, we're talking about players who don't come and play as freshmen. You're going to draft a player off 1 season of college performance. I think that's just it's a much more dicey road than I think most people would expect it to be.
What is the value if you have 2 years of college to getting to know these players more in high school and using your time and resources on that? I just don't see teams doing that under that scenario. Like, especially as like an area guy, you're going to get to know a guy in your area who is going to go, like you're in Southern California, he's going to go off and play at Tennessee. Like he's not even in your area anyway. Yeah. So you're going to spend time doing that. He's got 2 years ahead of him. I mean, a lot of teams in their models anyway, some teams bake in multiple years of performance history. Some are very heavily leaning on their draft platform year for doing that. And even right now with the high school players, it varies by team and by area scout. Some of the area scouts get to know these guys as underclassmen. Some of them are just learning who the 27s are right now. So
yeah,
I don't know. I don't really see teams spending much, if any time at all, on high school players if they can't draft them for another 2 years anyway.
I would hope, and I think there are a couple that would at least value it and at least make the pitch to their GMs that it would create value. Like I've talked to them. Whether or not that would get cleared, whether or not a front office would say, hey, yeah, we're going to spend money on this. I guess that's the bigger question. Maybe the more,
I think the scout would say, yeah, because it makes the job more valuable for them. But I don't think the owner or GM is going to, if you can't draft high school players, why are we scouting these guys so much? Let's just wait till they get to college and see them from there.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't want to hear anything about, oh, we've done all the work on players at that stage then, because there's plenty of events to go see. You're seeing it now. It's going to pay off for our draft coverage and our coverage of all these high school players that you're going to watch. So
the international stuff, man, every time MLB says anything, I just roll my eyes at these guys. Right. It's so absurd. And not the part about, well, let's do a draft. Okay. They've literally been trying to do an international draft since like Sandy Alderson was at the MLB offices in like the 1990s. Mm-hmm. It's probably like 30 years or something like that. It's been going on for a long time. They tried it in the last CBA, the CBA before that. There are advantages to an international draft that would obviously slow down these ultra early deals that teams are doing with players when they're 14, 13, 12 years old sometimes. That would be a good thing, right?
Right.
But then MLB is also talking about, oh, we gotta cut down on these early deals for the benefit of the players. Like, dude, you guys are Major League Baseball. Like, what are you talking about? You
need to they do are the organization not enforcing their own rules.
Here's how to cut down on the early deals. Hi, my name is Rob Manfred. I'm the commissioner of baseball. No more early deals, guys. Like, I get it. You know, we've been allowing these for years and years and years. And if you have a deal for, you know, guys for 27 or maybe 28, fine. Okay, like, we've been allowing these, but starting in 29 or 28, even fine, whatever, no more deals. Any deals you have are off. And if we catch wind going forward of any agreements, any deals that you guys are doing with players who are not eligible to sign, you will be penalized.
Do you think there's a realistic way for them to enforce it? Because it does feel like there's not an easy way for them to enforce that. And so they just kind of thrown their hands up and said, oh, well.
It's not that hard. I really don't think it's that hard. When they wanted to stop package, we wrote about how teams were doing package deals in Baseball America. And then MLB went and said, after the fact, after they had already signed. And
you ruined the fun players, for teams with that story,
and,
Ben.
And
you
knew these players it. Were signing for package deals. Look, MLB knows all of these agreements that are going on for like, they know it for 27, for 28, like a lot of them like 29 and 30. It's not a secret. So when MLB also talks about how, oh, like this is going to be a much more transparent system. I don't know. It seems pretty transparent to me when you know every player who's going to sign with every team pretty much for next year and multiple mm-hmm. years in advance. Like that actually is transparent. You could say a draft is a better system if you want, but
right.
It actually is more transparent than a draft. But when MLB wanted to crack down on package deals after that story, they just went to the Red Sox and said, all right, you are now penalized for this. A bunch of players got removed from the organization. there were penalties for the Red Sox. And then when the Braves came in after that and were, you know, bundling signings and doing other stuff under, you know, that were against MLB rules, they penalized the Braves. They gave them future signing mm-hmm. restrictions. John Coppolella, their GM at the time, got banned for life. Now he's reinstated, but like he got banned for life from MLB at the time. So yeah, you can just come in and put in restrictions. I don't want to hear MLB talking about like, oh, like we need a draft because otherwise there's nothing we can do. Like right. If you want to do it, you can do it. And you can argue whether they should or shouldn't crack mm-hmm. down on early deals, whatever. But when they cry about like, oh, there's nothing we can do. We need a draft. Like, yeah, there is. Like you
right.
can just, you're the commissioner. You can basically knock over whatever tables you want in
right.
the DR in Latin America and do that.
Where do you think the, oh, go ahead. If you're going to continue, I thought I don't want to interrupt you.
Well, the other part that I would really disagree with is raising the signing age for players. Yep. And MLB is, I think, doing that in part because they want to, like we talked about earlier, limit the players who are getting to the big leagues at an earlier age and getting to free agency and also salary arbitration too at an earlier age. and driving costs up. But they frame it as like, oh, like we're doing this for the benefit of players because now they're going to get better education. Like, come on, give me a break. That's not at all why they're doing this, nor is it even going to really be a factor. Like, you're actually like reducing a lot of those opportunities because you're getting education as you get into an MLB academy, because those teams have their own educational high school programs for players. Mm-hmm. But from a baseball standpoint, yes, like I would obviously I would like the agreement or that stage to not be at like 12 and 13 years old. I think that's bad for players. I think that's bad for teams. Like, just talked about like how hard it is to project 18-year-old high school pitching, like 12-year-old, 13-year-old, like what are we doing? This is nuts. And everybody, and it, like most people who are with teams are like, yeah, like we're just kind of guessing here.
Right.
I mean, yeah, like every now and then there's like a certain guy you're like, whoa, like, okay, like you see Ethan Salas at 13 years old and you're like, wow, like that's different. But there's plenty of guys too who are just like, I don't know, hopefully he's good still by the time he's 16 mm-hmm. and he signs. So the development of players will suffer if you raise the signing age from what right now is like 16/17 and move it back a year to 18. Because right now what's happening is these teams are agreeing to sign players when they're like 12, 13, 14 years old. And then who's developing them? Okay, they're still in their program with their team academy, but pretty much every team is running like a shadow development program mm-hmm. for the players who they have committed. So, hey, we just did a deal with this guy for 2029 and this guy for 2030. Well, we can't, like, you can't, they're actually not old enough to come into the team academy yet, but you can have a coach if you're the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Cubs or whoever, and go out to their field or some other field and work with that player mm-hmm. One-on-one, or bring guys together and develop them there. And like, I don't know if MLB, if you're listening, like maybe like just fast forward and don't listen to this part. I don't know if you want to hear it or not, like, but they know it's happening. So the teams are the ones who are giving these players professional development and instruction. And they get these guys together and bring them together in game. So like one team, you know, the Texas Rangers will have a game of their committed players against the Seattle Mariners committed players or something. And, mm-hmm. and then they'll bring in other, like, you know, tryout guys too, who are uncommitted, who they're evaluating, that kind of stuff, right. Having them play in games. So yeah, there's still some development going on within a player's own program where he's training, but a lot of that development right now, so the players are ready, is happening under the guidance of MLB teams. Now, if you push it back even later, that development is going mm-hmm. to suffer. There's a lot of disadvantages, I think, certainly from the union's perspective, as far as like, okay, what does this mean for long-term salaries from a labor relations perspective and all that. But just for the players, I think there are negatives to pushing the signing age back.
Right.
I think the draft itself is not a problem. I mean, it reduces some freedoms. I get that. Like, there's some give and take there. But moving the signing age back is something that MLB is proposing that I think is really – it's a poor idea from a baseball standpoint.
Right.
And it's being presented under these reasons that are very, very suspect.
Right. I'm curious if you think there is a way to, let's say if we solve some of these issues in the international market and we cleaned up the deals, do you think, like, if you couldn't sign, if you banned the deals happening before signing age, the signing age, let's just say for this example, stays at the current age, do you think there, like, teams would lose the incentive to do some of this development that you think is helpful for on-field players? Like, is there a scenario where MLB can still be involved in the development of players in the DR, in Latin America in general, prior to having deals with players, or do you think they would be like, well, we don't know if we're getting this player, so why are we going to invest the cost in coaching and time to train them up? We'll just leave it to the Buscones in the DR to do that and handle that for themselves, and we'll just take on development when they actually sign. Like, do you think there is a path to some sort of official development system with MLB in that market, or no? Like, it just feels like it's such a hazy, shadowy, wild west of deals and training and development. Like, it feels like there should be a path to making all this official, making it legitimate, making it better for the players, delaying the signing. It doesn't necessarily have to come with a draft. Obviously, that's what teams want, but it feels like there should be a path to improving some of these things that have been issues for decades.
Yeah, I mean, you could do it different ways. I guess you could say I'm not an expert in Dominican labor law, so like, I don't know exactly what would be like by the laws in the Dominican Republic, but you could have theoretically something where you say, okay, all right, you want to do a deal with this 14-year-old kid. All right, now it's not just a verbal deal. Like, you have to actually sign something in place. And if you back out for a reason that is not related to, you know, age or steroids, then you're on the hook for, you know, 50% or 75% of the agreed upon amount, and that amount counts against your bonus pool or something like that.
I still feel like the signing that early would be troubling, but
yeah, no, I don't think it's a great solution either. But I think, look, it used to be where you would sign on July 2nd, right? And the teams, even when before like the early, like the ultra early deals were happening, and even then, like, teams at a point were like hiding out players to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have this like kind of shadow development stuff. And then they realized like, oh, like, these guys aren't getting better maybe. And maybe we should support their development more in a more focused way and more structured way before they sign. But even though like you'd have guys sign on July 2nd, and then you'd basically have a year or 11 months until they make their official debut in the Dominican Summer League the following year at the beginning of June. So you'd have a lot of time to actually get on the field, work with these players, teach them the daily routine, how we take infield, like, oh, just learning a lot of like the basic fundamental stuff that, you know, I'm sure we take for granted just watching big league players or minor league players or college players. That guy's at, you know, if you're 16 years old, you just don't know how to do, especially if you've been around in a structured game environment, or even if you have, like, there's a lot of little things just to learn and understand about some of the basic points of the game as an infielder or as a hitter or as a base runner, that kind of stuff. So if you try to like microwave that all, especially if you raise the signing age to 18, you're just like, okay, we don't have the opportunity to do any of that until the player is 18, then the quality of the player and the quality of play is going to suffer.
Yeah. Okay. Well, other than all that, we think the proposal is great.
Yeah, I like that it's playing out all in public too. I like that everybody's just like screaming at each other in the middle of a season and people are focused on a work.
Hey, I will say, Ben, the annual cop-out that you give in our what's going to be the big storyline, I don't know what you said this year. I think you probably said something we're not thinking about. My storyline
was Jacob Mizuraski throwing 108 miles an hour.
my storyline was CBA negotiations looming over the season. And I think I have to be able to take credit for that one, because I knew it was going to suck and I wasn't looking forward to it. And I do think it sucks, because so much of this I don't think will come to pass. And it'll be a lot of just like hemming and hawing and complaining and bemoaning the state of the game for no reason. Hopefully, we've spent a lot of time and energy on it so far. But I do think this is, from my perspective, this is the first like kind of misstep from the league in terms of like the PR war that involves like where the casual fans are. I do feel like the casual
on
fans
the draft side specifically, you mean?
With this specific proposal overall, collectively, including the international stuff. Although,
are you including the salary cap in that?
No, I'm not.
Okay, because I think the fans are more,
no, exactly. Yeah. That's my point. I think the fans are on board for the salary cap. I think most fans want it, like it, buy into the messaging. I think this proposal was, and in general, like beforehand, when I saw the salary cap proposal, I'm like reading online, looking at Reddit, like trying to just get a pulse of like what fans in general think. And I feel like they're largely for it. When this one dropped, I found very little fan support for it. And that's what I mean by, I think this is MLB's first like misstep. Because to the extent that like getting the casual fans on your side or not to that mattering, I think this hurt them, because I don't think most people were excited about it at all or thought it would be beneficial for baseball in the long run, unless you are like exclusively a college baseball fan you don't care about
college baseball coach,
right? Or a college baseball coach. They certainly were excited about it. It does seem like it didn't come across well, is my sense from basically anyone. So I can't imagine that that's good for them.
You know what I did like? I like that they're open to trading more draft picks.
I was about to bring that one up, because the only positive feedback I got from teams were like, oh, draft pick trading seems cool, I'm good with that. After like hundreds of words about why it was a terrible proposal, people do seem to be on board with draft pick trading. I think there's a path to it happening in the future. I mean, we already have it with the comp picks. We've seen one of those picks get traded, but whether it comes in concert with a hard slotting system or whether it doesn't, I do think like eventually that seems like something enough people can be on board with and is generally just more fun for the draft. I'll hate to listen back to these podcasts when I have to do a mock draft that includes pick trades leading up to the day of, but it would certainly be more fun if you're a Giants fan.
And I think the mock draft,
though, you
actually
want Rock Chulowski and you can just trade up for him instead of like trying to convince teams that like three teams are going to pass in front of you to get him. Like, I don't know, if you could just trade up to get him, if you really like him and think he's a generational player and everyone else doesn't, like, go just trade for him.
I think if you see a team making a trade, though, you know, okay, there's got to be somebody specific in mind who they're making this trade for.
Well, I even mean like, at least how the NFL and the NBA drafts work, like they will do mock drafts where they're predicting a trade to happen. It's not like, oh, the team traded for the player a week before. It's like, yeah, because a lot of the trades happen on the clock. So depending on how the board plays out, let's say there's a run of, let's say we have three elite pitchers at the top of a board one year. The first two pitchers go quicker than maybe we thought. Maybe there's a team that like really, we heard they really want one of these college pitchers. They expect him to get to them. Now they're going to have to trade up. So like, yeah, their mocks definitely incorporate trades they think could happen or I have heard are going to happen. So it's not just like, here's the draft, here's my projection with the current order. It's like, here's my projection of what the current order could be with this trade and for which player. So it definitely is more complicated than like, I have the draft order in front of me and I'm making picks.
I like the trading of picks idea. And I like that. Yeah. All right. Fine.
Yeah. To be clear, the only negative is it makes my life more difficult for mocks, I think, is a good
idea. I like that part as well too. And it's good. I like that they put some guardrails in where it's like, okay, let's protect idiots from themselves and like not mortgaging your future entirely. Yeah,
what they put in was, and this one is, teams wouldn't be allowed to trade away first round picks in back-to-back drafts, and no team could acquire more than three additional picks in the top three rounds of any given draft. So those are some of the guardrails.
So you can have that in place, but also give teams a lot more freedom where you're trying to make a trade. It's interesting because like the trade deadline is still, like, it's coming up, like you're kind of in trade season, but not quite.
Right.
Yeah, but maybe it can accelerate things where it's like, you know, you're trying to make a deal, or maybe it's in the off season too, over, you know, in December or January, you're like, we're trying to make a deal with this team, but like their farm system sucks, man. Like, we don't like any of these guys, or just the value doesn't line up. Like, hey, like the Padres have Ethan Salas, we really like him, but they're obviously not going to trade him, and we don't love maybe the rest of the
you're adding
system.
Some lubrication to trade season, making more avenues for players to get moved.
So we'll take that 28th pick or that 56th pick and we'll get somebody who we know we can choose, we will like that player. We'll get our option of who we want to take there without being restricted to the players that are currently in your farm system. Like you said, and the same thing. Yeah. Oh, we're picking the top. Oh, we'd rather have some more depth of picks, or we'd rather move up. Hey, that's great too. So I like, I just like teams having more freedom to make decisions that way. So I would, I would welcome that. And I don't even, you obviously don't even need to attach that to anything else in this proposal as far as the high school players or the hard slotting or any of that stuff. Just let, give teams some more freedom to make these decisions with these picks.
Did you see the piece in here where MLB, as part of the proposal, MLB would require 10 players to attend the draft, and those players would get $50,000 a piece for showing up to the draft?
Is that because did anybody show up last year? Was that it?
Last year, I believe there are a couple players who said they wanted to go, but because there were only a handful, there weren't that many. I think MLB just decided we're not going to have players. We don't want to have a couple of you sitting by. Like if it takes a while, I think it was like, hey, if we don't have a good group of players, we'll just nix it for this year. But definitely seems like they want more players to show up.
Would it be optional still for players?
The way it was phrased is they would require 10 players selected by MLB to attend. So I'm not sure how that works.
I don't know how you can take somebody who's not part of Major League Baseball and is not a member of the union to require them to do that. As long as it's optional.
Imagine their agents would say, no, they're going to be at home. Like, yeah, I don't know how you force that on a player who's not in your system currently, but
yeah, that's pretty good though. I didn't know you got $50,000, Carlos, just to be on the draft show.
That's why I've tried to stay on it. You know, I tried to up that to $100,000
for one night of work. That's pretty good.
I don't know if I have the value as the players do on this one, unfortunately. But try and see if there's just any other components of this that we haven't touched on that I want to pick your brain on or get your thoughts on.
The other part too, I guess going back to the international side is if you go to an international draft, which again, I'm not opposed to an international draft, but I think like anybody who's has any bit of like morals or ethics wants steroids out of that side of the game. Like, I don't know how you like entirely remove that. If you're MLB, like, I don't blame MLB. There's only so much they can do. But one of the things they tell, we want to like get that out of baseball and like a draft brings more transparency, et cetera, et cetera. But like one thing that's happening right now, both on the steroids and the age and identity investigation side, is because MLB knows who these guys are who have deals years in advance. Like this guy has $2 million with the Red Sox for 2029. The Brewers have 1.4 with this guy for 2028. Okay. So now MLB has multiple years where they can go out ahead of time and, you know, the teams, you know, there are certain restrictions on the drug testing side, but like, all right, at least from the agent identity side, you can, MLB can now use their investigators to spend years going out ahead of time and investigating these players. Let's say in the next couple of drafts will be a little bit different because you kind of know who the top players are going to be based on who has these big money agreements in place that obviously would come apart if there's a draft.
Right.
But like, let's say for like 2031 draft, okay, who are the top players that you're going to go out if you're MLB and investigate these guys? Like, how are you going to know who they are? MLB claims they know who they are. Yeah, you know now because you know who's getting all this big money agreements going.
But without those, there's just not that.
It's not like the SEC and the ACC or like high school baseball where like these guys are being extensively scouted in games and all this stuff. Like, all right, like maybe like a handful of guys that you'll know. But there's guys, I mean, there's just guys all over the country in the DR and Venezuela, and you're going to go out and figure out who these guys, who like the actual top players are, who will be top picks in advance. I don't think so. Like, it's not going to be as easy as it is now. And I think MLB has done a much better job in the last couple of years. When it comes to age and identity investigations, catching a lot more players than they used to, or a lot of guys were, I mean, just getting through the cracks with ages and identities that were not accurate. And I'm not talking about, you know, 20 years ago. I'm talking about in recent
I wonder if there would be like an option to do some sort of a combined system as part of an international draft, and maybe you'd say it's like it's too late at that point. Like these players,
they would do like a league for players, but like there's just players everywhere. Like
yeah,
it's not like we'll just look who's on like Baseball America's list or like MLB Pipeline's internal draft ranking or whatever, and like bring those guys to the combine and like talk to teams, etc. Like it's a lot more challenging in Latin America.
Yeah, it's hard to blame MLB fully for that one. It just seems like it's kind of a problem with the industry at large.
Right. It gets a lot more. I think it gets more complicated actually if you go to a draft system than if you have it what it is now, where you have multiple years to be able to investigate these guys and do drug tests on them in advance.
Did you hear from many agents in the Latin American side about this proposal? Have you spent time talking with them yet? Is there still, I know a few years ago we talked about how like it had gotten bad enough in that market to where like they were more open to an international draft than they had been in previous years. What's your sense of like how they took in this news? If you've had those combos,
as far as like the draft itself, I think there are a lot of both scouts and agents who previously were against the draft because it just reduces freedoms, reduces competition.
Yep.
Who are now either
ambivalent
or in favor of the draft, because they're saying, look, if you're an agent, you have to get these players. The teams are looking to sign players who are like 13 years old, right? So, okay, you have to keep up with what the teams are looking for. So you have to get a player ready to sign when he's 13. Like what? So then you have to get the player. You have to have the player into your academy and training him and developing the player when he's like 11 and 12. And then, okay, so he reaches a deal when he's 13. But then there's still 3 or 4 years ahead where you have to, house, feed, medicine, training, equipment. Like the kids are going to grow a lot, like spikes, gloves, all this stuff, like gas to, transportation to get all around the country to go to different places. Like it's not, some programs run leaner with like a focused group of players, but it's not an inexpensive proposition. Which is also why a lot of these guys are like borrowing money and like losing money in a lot of cases from their operations. So I think if you have a draft in place and you push everything back, a lot of them are saying, look, like, it'd be better. We'll have more time to develop these players and get them ready when they're, to be scouted when they're 15 and 16 years old, instead of right now where it's like we got to get a bunch of 12 and 13 year olds ready for these teams to try to sign. The teams are like, yeah, that also would be better for my career and my livelihood and my sanity if I wasn't running around trying to evaluate a bunch of 12 and 13 year olds, if I could wait until these guys actually, had some like real tools by the time they're 16 years old.
Yeah. Okay. Any other thoughts on this? I think we've covered the gamut pretty well. I'm glad to finally get your opinions here on the pod. It's fun to talk through. There's always something that comes up in these discussions that I haven't quite thought of, that it's nice to just hear your perspective on it. So I'm sure the listeners value that as well.
Yeah. Was there anything we missed from the proposal?
Sure there was. If you guys have any questions on something that you want to hear us address specifically, or if you just have any other thoughts that maybe came up from listening to the conversation about this, definitely let us know. We'll hopefully bring back the mailbag episodes. I'm not exactly sure if we'll have one next week, Tuesday before the draft. If we can, we'll try to get that, but it's just hard to make promises on the schedule at this stage. I know we are planning to have our typical like pre-draft preview for every team like we've done the past few years. You guys have really enjoyed that episode, so plan on seeing that. But otherwise, send us any questions you might have on on this topic or any others, whether it's draft related, prospects related. I know post draft, there's still going to be a little bit of travel, but hopefully we'll be able to talk more about the pro game when me and Ben can spend some more time on those players, because there's certainly been a lot of changes, a lot of developments, a lot of players moving up and down boards in the pro scene. But obviously, we've got the BA pod and the pro guys who are full time covering that to get you covered if you just need that in your life. You can email us at futureprojection@baseballamerica.com. You can find Ben on Twitter at Ben Badler. You can find me at Carlos A. Collazo. You can also rate and review the show if you feel so inclined. We would appreciate any five-star review you can give us on your podcast listener of choice. That helps move the show out to more people who would otherwise maybe not hear about it. So we really do appreciate you guys taking the time to do that. With all that info out of the way, Ben, anything else you want to add or mention or chat about before we get out of here?
No, back to getting our 27, actually updating our 26 high school player rankings, 27s, 28s. We don't slow down.
We don't. Nope. Three full years of draft coverage, high school coverage, college coverage. We're in the final stages. We'll have one final BA 500 update, kind of a last fine-tuning tweak, finalized reports for everyone on the 500 to get you ready for draft day. We've got a ton of content scheduled in the next week in the lead up to the draft. We've got a staff draft coming out. We've got a couple more mock drafts coming out. Tons of coverage to get you ready for draft day. I know it's kind of that season for everyone who's not focused full time on the draft like we are. So that's exciting. Can't wait to see what actually happens. It'll be fun to break it down live in Philadelphia. And I know Ben will be breaking everything down behind the scenes for the site as well. We just got a ton coming. It's a busy time. So I guess we should close out the show and get back to work here. So for Ben, I'm Carlos. Thanks for listening, everybody. So long.